All right, we're picking up our study in Genesis chapter 33. We covered a little bit of it last time. Let's start at verse 8. That'll get what's going on. Esau asked, "What do you mean by all these droves I met?" Droves. A drover is someone who drives herds of livestock. So, Jacob replies, "To find favor in your eyes, my lord." But Esau said, "I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." So clearly Esau comes, reconciled. He's not angry. Keep what you have for yourself. And Jacob insists, "No, please, if I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me, for to see your face is like seeing the face of God, now that you have received me favorably." So he's thanking God that this is working out. "Please accept the present that was brought to you, for God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need." And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. So they're getting along. Esau is not a part of the promise, and we're going to see them really part. But they part amicably. Then Esau said, "Let us be on our way. I'll accompany you." He's brought 400 men. If you're traveling in the Middle East in those days, you were subject to raiders. And so Esau makes a gracious offer. "My men, my 400 men, will accompany you. And let's be on our way. I'll accompany you." But Jacob said to him, "My lord knows that the children are tender and that I must care for the ewes and cows that are nursing their young. If they are driven hard just one day, all the animals will die." We have to move very, very slowly. So "let my lord go on ahead of his servant while I move along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and that of the children until I come to my lord in Seir." Seir is one of the names for Edom. This is the area south of the Dead Sea. So again, I always draw here the Mediterranean, and here's the Nile River Delta, and then here's the Dead Sea, Jordan River, Sea of Galilee, and Jordan River continues. Seir and Edom is this region out here. I don't know how proportional I am, but it's south and east of the Dead Sea. So it's kind of interesting. Jacob indicates that he's going to go with his brother to his brother's home. But he doesn't. Then he says, then Esau says, "Then let me leave some of my men with you." So they're very accommodating. Both are clearly happy with each other and things are fine. So that day Esau started on... I skipped the verse. "But why do that?" Jacob asked. "Just let me find favor in the eyes of my lord." So finally, why isn't Jacob worried? Why isn't he concerned that he wouldn't have these 400 men or take care of them? He's got young, his family, children. Remember the vision that he had? When he came into the land, God showed him that the angels were going on both sides of him. So he's not concerned. All right. "Just let me find favor in the eyes of my lord." So that day Esau started on his way back to Seir. Jacob, however, went to Succoth. Now the name Succoth, where he went, was not Succoth at this time. That's the city that was later built there, like in the days when Moses is writing. Where he built a place for himself and made shelters for his livestock, that is why the place is called Succoth, which means succor. We get the English word succor from that, shelters. after Jacob came from Padan Aram. Now that's going back, it's talking about the whole trip. Padan Aram is up where Laban was. He arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped within sight of the city. For 100 pieces of silver, he bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent. Now, that's significant because, Abraham before him, his grandfather before him, he's buying a piece of land because, again, faith in the promise that ultimately this is where they're going to be. However, where should Jacob be?
With Esau.
Well, no, I don't think he needs to go with Esau. And in fact, Esau, remember that Esau has turned away from the Lord. He's married foreign women. He has no interest in the promise. He despised the promise. So, I mean, he wants to get along with his brother, but his brother, you know. But where think of Jacob leaving when he left, when he thought his brother would kill him, and might have, as far as that goes. Before he left, he had a dream at Bethel, right? The house of God. And God talked to him about returning to that place. And Jacob the stinker doesn't do that. In fact, while we're guessing at the time frame, because Moses isn't interested in giving a chronology, he probably spends something like 10 years in the neighborhood of Shechem. And then finally goes to Bethel. So, Ed.
Was Shechem in Canaan?
Yeah.
It was. But he was. Why does it say the city of Shechem in Canaan? Okay, I see it.
Oh, but you point out something that just what was going to say. If this account was written, as many liberal scholars believe, way later, not written by Moses, but written much later, so that, see, that accounts, that way you can figure out all the miracles and you get rid of all the prophecies, and you say it was written later. But if it was written later, then it would have just said that he stayed at Shechem. It wouldn't point out that Shechem was in Canaan. But for the readers at the time of the Exodus, that's important. All right, well, that's just interesting. So he buys this land. There he set up an altar and called it El Eloha Israel in Hebrew. The God of Israel, or it can be mighty is the God of Israel. But still, we have to notice that he doesn't go back to Bethel. Yes, and it's not just a stop along the way. Yes.
My concern was, we went through this with Lot when he decided to hang around the city folk, and is Jacob going to get into the same sort of pit?
Look at the next chapter.
Okay.
This is exactly what is going to happen. And this is why, now people can interpret this different ways. I believe that God took the children of Israel out of Canaan. Remember how the point he had made that Abraham should never have left. And he stopped Isaac, who was on his way to Egypt. He couldn't stop Jacob because he's too fearful, and so he just puts up with him, but he doesn't want him to leave. And all of a sudden, we've got God through Joseph, that's the next story that's coming up, taking the children of Israel out of Canaan to Egypt. Why? Well, somebody could say, well, it's just, you know, God was watching over them, but the point is that these, remember the story of Judah killing all the people? Let's see, I'm talking about, can't remember the number of the chapter. Am I thinking correctly? No, I'm not thinking correctly. Well, the next, I'm going to figure out what I'm thinking about. But the next chapter is part of that. That we're going to look at right now. Dinah and the Shechemites. Now, Dinah, the daughter of Leah, so, and who are her brothers?
The whole bunch.
The first two, Reuben and Levi. And remember that what would be the significance of Levi is going to be involved in this story. That would be significant because Levi is the forebear of Moses, the author of this. And it's not a pretty story. So Moses is not blinking or covering up at all. Now Dinah, the daughter Leah had born to Jacob, which doesn't necessarily mean that Leah had only one daughter. It's just that she's the daughter. Went out to visit the women of the land. Well, you know, God was not urging Abraham, and as far as we know, Abraham had practically nothing to do with the people in Canaan. So this guy lives in Shechem, and his father is Hamor the Hivite. Maybe he names his son after the town, or the town is named after the son, you know, because Moses is looking back, and so we don't know about names. But at any rate, when Shechem, son of Hamor the Hivite, the ruler of that area, saw her, he took her and violated her. Oops. Now, the Hebrew word is violence. But, you know, there's all kinds of things that make us think twice. Clearly the scripture says that he was aggressive, but it also describes how much he cared about her later on. It doesn't say anything much. I mean, we don't get any feeling about Dinah, how she felt about the situation. But she shouldn't have been going out. I'm not trying to excuse what happened, but she's getting involved with the Canaanites. His heart was drawn to Dinah, Jacob, daughter of Jacob, and he loved the girl and spoke tenderly to her.
What was the Hebrew word for violated?
That word means raped.
Yeah.
And it is a word, it's a violent word. Well, you know, it's hard to say. Maybe, you know, the Canaanites were horrendous when it came to anything sexual. So he takes advantage of her, but he loves her, you know. But he does his own thing. All right. And Shechem said to his father Hamor, "Get me this girl as my wife." Now, as we're going along through this story, you have to say to yourself, why in the world is Moses telling us all of this detail? Well, just hang on. So what happens? When Jacob heard that his daughter Dinah had been defiled, his sons were in the fields with his livestock, and she wasn't simply defiled because she was violently attacked, but because she had sexual relations with a Canaanite. His sons were in the field with his livestock, so he kept quiet about it until he came home. Well, I think, you know, that Jacob is past 100 here, we estimate. So, you know, he's not going to get going. He's going to wait till the sons get there. Then Shechem's father Hamor went out to talk with Jacob. Now, Jacob's sons had come in from the fields as soon as they heard what had happened. They were filled with grief and fury because Shechem had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter. So it's, of course, he's violated her, but the other part is important too. A thing that should not be done. God's people, the children of Abraham, should not have anything to do with the Canaanites. But Hamor said to them, "My son Shechem has his heart set on your daughter. So he says it to everyone, but it's clearly Jacob's daughter. Please give her to him as his wife. Intermarry with us, give us your daughters, and take our daughters for yourselves. You can settle among us. The land is open to you. Live in it, trade in it, and acquire property in it." So you can have all the rights of people living here rather than being one of these wandering herdsman type Bedouin people. Then Shechem said to Dinah's father and brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and I will give you whatever you ask. Make the price for the bride and the gift I am to bring as great as you like, and I'll pay whatever you ask me. Only give me the girl as my wife." Because their sister Dinah had been defiled, Jacob's sons replied deceitfully as they spoke to Shechem and his father Hamor. So the thing keeps getting uglier. They said to them, "We can't do such a thing. We can't give our sister to a man who is not circumcised. That would be a disgrace to us. We will give our consent to you on one condition only, that you become like us by circumcising all your males. Then we will give you our daughters and take your daughters for ourselves. We'll settle among you and become one people with you. But if you will not agree to be circumcised, we'll take our sister and we'll move on." See, no one is being converted here. Shechem and his father are not offering to become believers in the covenant. They're just willing to meet whatever needs to be done. Their proposal seemed good to Hamor and his son Shechem. The young man, who was the most honored of all his father's household, lost no time in doing what they said. Ouch. Yeah. All right. Because he was delighted with Jacob's daughter. So Hamor and his son Shechem went to the gate of their city. That's the place where all the meetings and public affairs are carried on. To speak to their fellow townsmen. "These men are friendly toward us," they said. "Let them live in our land and trade in it. The land has plenty of room for them. We can marry their daughters and they can marry ours. But the men will consent to live with us as one people only on the condition that our males be circumcised as they themselves are. Won't their..." Now we got to convince these guys. No. All right? "Won't their livestock, their property, and all their other animals become ours?" And they're wealthy. Jacob's wealthy. He's got... And they don't... It doesn't necessarily mean that they plan to steal them, but they'll become ours because we'll be a stronger people with their wealth and so forth. So let us give our consent to them and they will settle among us. All the men who went out of the city gate agreed with Hamor and his son Shechem, who are clearly the leaders, and every male in the city was circumcised. 3 days later, while all of them were still in pain, two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and attacked the unsuspecting city. So we're not talking about huge numbers of people. Esau's 400 men were a formidable force. So you can think of these, like the people in Shechem or the Edomites or whatever, as mighty nations. But if you go over to Israel, you just realize how small the scale of everything is. All right. So they go in there and they kill them all. Okay? They killing every male. They put Hamor and his son Shechem to the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and left. The sons of Jacob came upon the dead bodies and looted the city. So the rest of the sons, I don't know if they know we don't know anything about. I mean, did Reuben and Levi tell them what had happened? Probably, you know. But anyway, or maybe they just came upon it. I don't know. But they come, and they see all the dead bodies. So they loot the city where their sister had been defiled. They seize their flocks and herds and donkeys and everything else of theirs in the city and out in the fields. They carried off all their wealth and all their women and children, taking as plunder everything in the houses. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me a stench to the Canaanites and the Perizzites, the people living in this land. We are few in number, and if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed." So the tripper is back in form again. He's not worried about the fact that Dinah went with the Canaanite girls, that they were willing to make this deal. Notice, remember that it said, because their sister Dinah had been defiled, Jacob's sons replied deceitfully. So you very much get the impression that Jacob was willing to make this deal. And now he's unhappy because they went out and killed all these people and have blown it. So our conniver Jacob is still in rich form here. But they replied, "Should he have treated our sister like a prostitute?" That could just be general, but it could also be a reference to the fact that they were willing to pay whatever. That, see, the money will take care of it. But notice Jacob and his sons, they're not worrying about the Lord's covenant and what the Lord had commanded them at all. They're just worried about their own like honor and whatever else, you know. Okay, so now Moses tells us that things get at least a little bit better. Then God said to Jacob, and remember, we're talking probably a 10-year period here, that in all of this time since he left his brother Esau, there's a significant period of time. God said to Jacob, "Go up to Bethel and settle there, and build an altar there to God," just like we said before, "who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau. You've forgotten the God who watches over you, and you've gotten all involved in this sordid affair." So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, "Get rid of the foreign gods you have with you, and purify yourselves, and change your clothes." Purify yourselves of ceremonial washing. So Jacob is straightening out here, and remember they brought the household gods with them, and I mean, it's not clear at all what kind of compromises. They came from Laban. Terah, Abraham's father, was a compromiser, and so Moses' brother as well. Yes, Nahor.
Did they get rid of the women? Did they leave the women behind too? Because it said that they took their sheep and everything and their women. Mm-hmm. So did they leave the women and then go up to Bethel, or did they take the women with them? Because even if they would get rid of the gods, they still have the women.
Oh, yes, but he said to his household and to all who were with him, that's the women. We've got to dump this. We have to have loyalty to the Lord and only the Lord. Now again, boy, if you were going to make a movie of this, wow, you would have a difficult time making these transitions, wouldn't you? I mean, what happened afterwards, and how long was it before Jacob decided? See, that's the problem with making movies. You really can't make a movie simply using many of the there was a movie made of Joseph, Jacob and Joseph, it was called. I haven't seen it in 15 years. It used to be shown around Easter time. It was simply titled Jacob and Joseph. It was really the story of Joseph. And there's so much detail, as we will see when we get into the story of Joseph, that you don't have to add very much. And the movie was very faithful. Much of the dialogue came right out of the Bible, you know. It was very well done. This area here, Moses just isn't... what he wants to do is tell us how God is going to save sinful people. So he tells us, man, look at these people. They can't stay in Canaan because everything is falling apart. And I was looking back. The story that I was referring to is the story of Judah. It's coming later. And it's another story that shows... they've got to get away from these Canaanites. And so God takes them to Egypt. But it's just not pretty. And so Moses just tells us just barely enough so we can figure out what he's getting at. So Jacob straightens up here a little bit, clearly. He says, you get rid of your foreign gods. I know you have them. Get rid of them. I've tolerated them. I'm not going to tolerate them anymore. Purify yourselves and change your clothes. Make a clean cut from this, what that was wrong. Then come, let us go up to Bethel, the house of God, where I will build an altar to God, Bethel means house of God, where I will build an altar to God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and who has been with me wherever I have gone, despite the fact that I rarely have responded in kind at all. But see, we're seeing, this is not a story about Jacob, this is a story about God. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had and the rings in their ears. Now, this is speculation about that, but for sure, the earrings represented something connected to the religion. Some people think that it is a way of declaring your allegiance, you're like a slave. And the slaves wore rings. But all of those are, again, Moses just doesn't give us that much detail. Probably his readers understood that custom. You know, we're kind of guessing. We see a few things. But at any rate, they got to get rid of them, so it clearly has something to do with the idolatry. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had and the rings in their ears, and Jacob buried them under the oak at Shechem. That was a place of idol worship. So we bury the stuff right there. Then they set out, and the terror of God fell upon the towns all around them, so that no one pursued them. So all the towns that were related to the Hivites, to the Shechem, and so forth, were afraid. Why? Well, Moses doesn't tell us why. Had God shown remarkable protection? I don't know. He doesn't tell us. Jacob and all the people with him came to Luz. Luz is the Canaanite name for the place that Jacob 20 years earlier, or now 30 years earlier, had called the house of God, Bethel. In the land of Canaan. Once again, he mentions that it's Luz in the land of Canaan. Luz, means light, if I'm remembering correctly, and probably was a common name. So the fact that Moses identifies that as in Canaan is once again evidence that Moses is writing it in Moses' day, not later on, and he wouldn't have put all these details in. If it had been written by somebody else much later on. There he built an altar and he called the place El Bethel, so the God of the house of God. Because it was there that God revealed himself to him when he was fleeing from his brother, and it was there that he should have gone in the very first place. And it's almost as if the Lord... because the Lord is revealing this to Moses, the details and so forth, and Moses is being sort of kind to Jacob. The account doesn't say that you should, but the place you should have gone to. So it's kind of kind for him. Now Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, so remember Rebekah is Jacob's favorite, but she has probably died. And Deborah is mentioned, perhaps because she as Rebecca's nurse, nurse, difficult word, maid servant kind of, but not, there are two different words. Someone who cared for Dinah may have been like a grandmother type figure to the boys as they grew up. And so she gets mentioned and was buried under the oak below Bethel. So it was named Alon Bakuth, the oak of weeping. So they're clearly sad that Deborah, this servant, has died. Now, once again, the opportunity then to for us to understand that slavery in the ancient world had nothing to do with slavery in our country. When you were a slave in a household, like when the prodigal son returns home, his plan, you know, he had a plan, was that he would ask his father to treat him as one of his day laborers. Well, the day laborers were well down, they were hired to work, and there was no relationship between the family and those people other than they agreed to work and they would work and get paid. But a slave is a part of the household. So they call that the oak of weeping when they bury her. After Jacob returned from Padan Aram, so now again, Moses kind of skips over the whole Shechem thing, doesn't he, in a sense, by going back to the trip, all these bad things that happen, and God just, okay, yeah, God is to swallow hard. And we think, oh, that Jacob, can you believe him? Until you realize how many times God has swallowed hard it's always kind of troublesome, isn't it? You come to church, and we sing an opening hymn, and the liturgy begins, and what's the first thing we do?
Confess.
The same ones that we confessed last Sunday. You know, and you think to yourself, oh man, you know, is the Lord really going to put up with this? Well, here we are. So in the Old Testament, we really get to see God. God said to him, God appeared to him again and blessed him. God said to him, your name is Jacob, but you will no longer be called Jacob. Your name will be Israel. Now, it isn't, did he name him Israel when they fought? Perhaps not, but because of the fight, and so it just gets mentioned, but the timing of the naming is not important. But maybe it was. I mean, there's no way to know. It's the same thing. You will be called Struggles with God instead of Foot Tripper. Yeah. So he named him Israel. And that's kind of like God saying, I have a tough time with you, Jacob. He names him Struggles with God. Okay. And God said to him, I am God Almighty. See, that's the name El Shaddai, the God of power and strength. I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and increase in number. You're clearly not going to be fruitful and increase in number because you're such a wonderful guy. You know, God is going to do this. A nation and a community of nations will come from you, and kings will come from your body. Now, a community of nations. That's interesting, and it's kind of hard. Yeah, is that strictly a term that should be understood in Old Testament terms, in terms that Jacob would have grasped? Or is there more here? Because Israel was always a nation, wasn't it? What is the community of nations? Well, one wonders whether it's not the fact that when the coming of Jesus, the gospel goes out even to us, who have nothing to do with Abraham at all, except that we share the faith of Abraham. So, I don't know. But kings will come from your body. The land I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I also give to you, and I will give this land to your descendants after you. So it's going to be the land of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in good time. Then God went up from him at the place where he had talked with him. So Jacob has the privilege of communing with God, of God is talking with him. He doesn't say too much, probably wisely. We certainly, there's nothing recalled. And we have the privilege, and we could even use the same word, can't we, of communing with God. Jacob set up a stone pillar at the place where God had talked with him, and he poured out a drink offering on it. He also poured oil on it. Well, the drink offering, that's a typical offering of God's people. That represents giving yourself to the Lord. Pouring the oil on it is kind of a sense of dedicating it. You know, like the Messiah is the anointed one. He pours oil on this. And you imagine Jacob returning to the place, and perhaps is the rock the same rock that he had slept against and had set up 30 years before? Well, rocks, who's going to take the time to move a heavy rock, you know? So one thinks that he sees the very same rock, and so he's rededicating himself. Jacob called the place where God had talked with him Bethel. And that isn't anything new. Everything is being renewed again. He's reconnecting. God had appeared to him, and all these bad things had happened. He should have learned lessons from Laban being a conniver, but he didn't particularly. And all these bad things are happening even after that. God blesses him that his brother Esau reconciles with him, but none of this really, Jacob is just cranky. But God agrees with him. So everything is like being done over again. It's like you get another chance. Then they moved on from Bethel. Now, remember, Isaac's still alive. And does Jacob not see Isaac? He ultimately does. But did he go up and visit him? I mean, there's nothing in the story that says he does. We just don't know. So while they were still some distance from Ephrath, you know it by a little different name. Ephrathah, right. But thou Bethlehem in Ephrathah. They're on their way to Bethlehem. They're heading south to Beersheba, toward Beersheba, wherever Isaac is. And Rachel is giving birth, and she had great difficulty. And as she was having great difficulty in childbirth, these are in Hebrew dramatic words. Great difficulty. People in America in the 21st century assume, well, somebody's going to come with a shot of something and fix it. But it's not going to get fixed. The words great difficulty are grim words. She's dying. Probably, perhaps bleeding out. The midwife said to her, "Don't be afraid, for you have another son." So the child is born, and Rachel is still alive. So as she breathed her last, for she was dying, she named her son Ben-Oni, son of my sorrow. But his father named him Benjamin, Ben-Yamin. Ben-Yamin means son of my right hand, my favorite son. It's again, Moses just gives these details. It's almost like Jacob doesn't honor his wife. But on the other hand, does he want to be reminded by Benjamin's name of her death? She was his beloved, you know. So and very possibly too, he didn't rename him. He just named him Benjamin. So he had two names. It was just too much for him to be called Benoni. So it's Benjamin. Benoni doesn't sound too good, huh? Oni? all right. So Benjamin, of course, is the youngest of the 12 sons of Jacob. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Over her tomb and Hebron, well, over her tomb, Jacob set up a pillar, and to this day that pillar marks Rachel's tomb. And so these are some of the ancient places. Rachel's tomb, or not the pillar, there's no evidence of that pillar remaining, but we're pretty sure we know the place where that is. Yes?
We didn't read anywhere where Joseph was born, did we?
No. Other than that he was one of the children. Right. In fact, I'm thinking about it. Now, various of the children were named, weren't they? I don't think Joseph is, but he's going to be named coming up, right in the next section. I'm not sure. I might be wrong there if his birth was mentioned when they were giving the various times, but I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know. Israel moved on again and pitched his tent beyond Migdal Eder. Yes, you got found it?
Yes, Genesis 30:22. Mm-hmm. She became pregnant, gave birth to a son, and said, God has taken away my disgrace. She named him Joseph.
Ah, yes. See, okay. That's what I was thinking of, but then when I said, maybe not, you know, okay. So, all right. So he's mentioned there. Way to go. Okay. At Migdal Eder, while Israel was living in that region, Reuben went in and slept with his father's concubine, Bilhah, and Israel heard of it. Okay, now this probably has great significance beyond just the words. Later on in chapter 49 of Genesis, when Jacob is dying and he's going to give the blessing to his 12 sons, Reuben pays the price for this. And scholars who have a really good feel for the ancient Middle East, you know, really people who've spent their lives studying these things, believe that Reuben was asserting his right to be the head of the household. Jacob's getting old. Israel is getting old, and so he takes his father's concubine. And that makes sense to me, because again, who is Reuben? He is the firstborn and the firstborn.
Yeah.
Boy, in the Old Testament, you don't want to be a firstborn. The angel of death is after you, and you never get your due. It's just tough going, you know. All right. Well, to me, that makes sense. He's just, this is what happens when you come of age, growing up in that terrible land of Canaan. And that's why I believe God decides, I've got to get my people out of there, because it's just going to be a disaster. And you get that same sense, you know, how bad can the world get? You know, and so the souls beneath the altar cry out, how long, O Lord, before we're vindicated? And God's people say, you know, especially if someone you love gets sucked into the end of the world and abandons the Lord. Well, and then Moses wants to kind of sum up Jacob because he's about to move on. So Jacob had 12 sons, the sons of Leah, Reuben, the firstborn of Jacob, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. The sons of Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin. the sons of Rachel's maidservant Bilhah, Dan and Naphtali, the sons of Leah's maidservant Zilpah, Gad and Asher. These were the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Padan Aram. So all of the sons, so see, this is where we're getting the sense. If the children were all, if the sons were all born in Padan Aram, then, you know, how are Simeon and Levi, Reuben and Levi, old enough to kill all these men? That leads us to believe that that Jacob spent a good deal of time in Shechem, not a small amount of time. Dinah, well, we don't know, and there's no indication when Dinah was born, but she's old enough to be Shechem's wife.
If you follow that line of thinking, then you don't follow the line of thinking that Leah had children before they left, and that Jacob had the small children when he was talking to Esau, that he had to travel slowly. So I have always been of the opinion that there was children that were born to Leah before they left.
Well, that I must have said something wrong. I'm agreeing with you,
okay,
or I want
I
to agree.
You said that all of these were born in the name I have trouble with, Padan Aram.
Aramaic comes from that. Padan Aram. Well, he had little children. Well, you know, when he left, Padan Aram, those children could be babes in arms.
Right.
You know.
The footnote says, obviously, a summary statement since Benjamin was born in Canaan.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, yes, okay, but... yes, right.
Tradition also is that Benjamin was born in Bethlehem.
Well, the place where... she died, that's tradition, and that's an ancient tradition, it's very likely correct, is between Jerusalem and Bethlehem, and very close to Bethlehem. So you can easily say that she gave birth in Bethlehem and died there. Yeah. Yeah, Moses isn't going to be concerned. He says the children, remember what he's doing. Four times now that he has referred, taken things back to Padan Aram. He keeps saying that? Moses keeps, why? Well, there's not a verse that says why. I'll give you my speculation. The speculation is that God brought Jacob back. I'm going to go back. And God thinks, okay, this is wonderful. And it's one disaster after another. So what does God do? He just keeps referring back to Padan Aram and sort of skips over this whole... I mean, the story's told, it's ugly, and there it is. But, you know, it's like, oh, this is a chapter that we don't want to get too involved in. I don't know. You know, there may be an entirely different reason. But yes, I wouldn't be concerned that Benjamin is born in Bethlehem and he says all the sons were born. Yeah, I mean, that's just, yeah, that's a good way to say it. It's a summary statement. Okay, verse 27, Jacob came home to his father Isaac in Mamre. Now, that doesn't mean that he spent 10 plus years in the promised land, never saw his father. Maybe he went up and down, rather, down and saw him, I don't know. But now he's there, where Isaac is. Near Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron. And so that, and Hebron, of course, is where Abraham has, that bought the land for a grave, where Abraham and Isaac had stayed. Isaac lived 180 years. Isaac was the oldest of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Then he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. You know, that's that phrase, the body decays, they take the bones and put them in the back of the cave, gathered to either his father or gathered here to his people. Old and full of years. And Isaac did okay, certainly better than his son. His sons, but particularly his son Jacob. and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him, which also tells us that the reconciliation between them was not a forced thing. That would be our impression. Okay, well, we're not going to skip over 36, but we're going to go quickly. Abraham is God's guy. And so Esau gets a promise from, remember, he couldn't get the promise that should have been his in his opinion, although he had despised it. But he did get a promise. And God honors Abraham and then Isaac too. So Moses, in telling the story, this is the ninth of the 10 toledoths. The only one left is the toledoth of Jacob. And remember, each toledoth has to do with the children of the person. So it's Jacob's toledoth, but it's about Joseph and his brothers, basically. Here too. This is the toledoth of Esau, that is Edom. The Edomites were enemies of Israel throughout the rest of Old Testament history. Who was the most famous New Testament person from Edom?
Herod
the Great. Herod the Great was an Edomite. That's why he was so worried about people showing up in Bethlehem, in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born King of the Jews?" Because Herod was probably half Edomite. He's considered to be half Jewish and half Edomite. But he doesn't qualify as a king. And so when they say, "Oh, where is he that is born King of the Jews?" Oh, look out, you got a duck. Herod's going to want to get rid of him. So, okay. Esau took his wives from the women of Canaan, Ada, daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Aholibama, daughter of Anna. Aholibama. Oh my goodness, you love these names, don't you? And granddaughter of Zibeon the Hivite, also Basemath, daughter of Ishmael, and sister of Nebaioth. Ada bore Eliphaz to Esau, Basemath bore Reuel, and Aholibama, I got to get this right, bore Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. These were the sons of Esau who were born to him in Canaan, and all of them became leaders of a growing group of people. Esau took his wives and sons and daughters and all the members of his household, as well as his livestock and all his other animals and all the goods he had acquired in Canaan, and moved to a land some distance from his brother Jacob. He doesn't want to be in the land that God promised. He's not a part of the promise. Their possessions were too great for them to remain together. The land where they were staying could not support them both because of their livestock. So Esau doesn't care. He leaves. So Esau, that is Edom, settled in the hill country of Seir, another name for Edom, and it is the land south and east of the Dead Sea. This is the account of Esau, the father of the Edomites in the hill country of Seir. These are the names of Esau's sons: Eliphaz, the son of Esau's wife Ada, and Reuel, the son of Esau's wife Basemath. The sons of Eliphaz: Teman, Omar, Zepho, Gatam, and Kenaz. Esau's son Eliphaz also had a concubine named Timnah, who bore him Amalek. It's difficult now. Are these the Amalekites? Very possibly. But the difficulty with the names, in fact, you can go elsewhere in the Bible. I didn't write down the various places, but there's always the possibility that there's more than one person with a particular name, or different people have different names. They're given different names. So it's just hard to nail this down. The sons of Reuel were Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizzah. They were grandsons of Esau's wife, Basemath. The sons of Esau's wife, Aholibama. I remember, so I had it right off the bat, right away. Aholibama, daughter of Anna, and the granddaughter of Zibeon, whom she bore to Esau, were Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. These were the chiefs among Esau's descendants. the sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn of Esau, chiefs Teman, Omar, Zepho, Kenaz, Korah, Gatam, and Amalek. These were the chiefs descended from Eliphaz in Edom. They were grandsons of Adah, the sons of Esau's son Reuel, chiefs Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizzah. These were the chiefs descended from Reuel and Edom. They were grandsons of Esau's wife, Basemath, the sons of Esau's wife, Aholibamah, chiefs Jeosh, Jalam, and Korah. So they're named as sons, and then they're named as chiefs. These were the chiefs descended from Esau's wife, Aholibamah, daughter of Anah. And these chiefs means people who were the forebears of clans of the nation. These were the sons of Esau, that is Edom, and these were their chiefs. These were the sons of Seir, the Horite, who were living in the region, Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anna, Dishan, Ezer, and Dishan. You got Dishan and Dishan, or Dishan. These sons of Seir and Edom were Horite chiefs. Well, what happens, of course, is that the sons of Esau drive them out. The sons of Lotan, Horai and Homan, Timnah was Lotan's sister. Sons of Shobal, Alvan, Manahath, Ebal, Shepho, and Onam. The sons of Zibeon, Aya, and Anna. This is the Anna who discovered the hot springs in the desert while he was grazing the donkeys of his father Zibeon. So that's a story, apparently, that Moses' readers knew of. The children of Anna, Dishan, and Aholibamah, daughter of Anna. The sons of Dishan, Hemdam, Eshban, Ithran, and Karan. The sons of Ezer, Bilhan, Zaavan, and Akan. The sons of Dishan, Uz, and Aran. These were the Horite chiefs, Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anna, Dishan, Ezer, and Dishan, I should make a better distinction. These were the Horite chiefs according to their divisions in the land of Seir. They're the people who were there. And now Esau comes and they take over the land. These were the kings who reigned in Edom before any Israelite king reigned. Bela, son of Beor, became king of Edom. His city was named Dinhaba. When Bela died, Jobab, son of Zerah from Bozrah, succeeded him as king. When Jobab died, that's like sounds like a name from the south, huh? Billy Bob, Jobab, all right, Jobab. Husham from the land of Temanites succeeded him as king. When Husham died, Hadad, son of Bedad, who defeated Midian in the country of Moab. Oh, these are now all names that become familiar later on, play a role in the Exodus and so forth, succeeded him as king. His city was named Aviv. Now, these names are all interesting. You're just fascinated by this, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
It's like reading the Yellow Pages. But these would be names that would be important to the people of the Exodus because they've got to deal with these people, and so Moses is recounting the history. And it would be a comfort to God's people to know that everything that's there happened according to God's will. So they should be confident as they go. All right, where did I stop? Hadad, when Hadad died? 37. Okay. When Samla died, Shaul from Rehoboth on the river succeeded him as king. And the river is typically the Euphrates. You can't absolutely, but that anything is called the river. So when Shaul died, Baal-Hanan, son of Achbor, succeeded him as king. When Baal-Hanan, son of Achbor, died, Hadad succeeded him as king. His city was named Pau, and his wife's name was Mehetabel, daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mesahab. These were the chiefs descended from Esau by name according to their clans and regions. So again, for the children of Israel as they come, here's where all these people came from. Timnah, Alva, Japheth, Aholibamah, Elah, Pinyon, Kenaz, Teman, Mibzar, Magdiel, and Iram. These were the chiefs of Edom, according to their settlements in the land they occupied. So Edom occupied the land. This was Esau, the father of the Edomites. So Moses has wrapped it up. And every Toledoth except the one, in a sense, most important to the children, but important to the children of Israel, so was Abraham, you know, but important to the children of Israel because they need to know why they were in Egypt, since Israel was the promised land. And one can imagine them being told, fathers telling children, well, you know, the stories of what happened in Canaan were not pretty. But here in Egypt, the Egyptians don't have anything to do with us, and so we're left alone, and we keep the faith. But we're going to return to the promised land when the time of judgment for the Canaanites comes.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Is there a diagram showing all the descendants?
Of? Yes, there are.
That would be great.
I have one.
I've got one too, I'm thinking to myself, now where is that? It's in my closet. If you've got one, why don't you bring it? That'll be easy. I won't worry about it. Yeah, they're long. Yes, right. There are people who have worked them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So.
Okay.
Help me.
All right, we'll start the story of Joseph. We read through four pages of the yellow pages, you know, and we made it. But those have importance. They fit. That they don't have the same importance for us as they had for the people of Israel doesn't make any difference, because we're concerned about the people of Israel. They are the people of God, and we are too. We need to know how God deals with his people. So remember what he had told Abraham that convinced Abraham that he should go. You will be a blessing, and anyone who blesses you will be blessed. Anyone who curses you will be cursed. Moses is carrying this out. Your relationship with Abraham determines your fate. Okay, now we meet Joseph. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. Now, so at long last, he's there. This is the account, the Toledoth of Jacob. Joseph. Now, see, that's a typical Toledoth. This is the Toledoth of Jacob. Joseph. Yes. But remember, they're always looking forward, aren't they? It's always this woman's seed is going to be born. And no one knows who the woman's seed is. Later on, we'll get to that as we go continue our study. But in fact, it's not very far off, actually. In the beginning of Exodus, we see that Moses' parents regarded him as a very favored child. Well, what did that mean? You know, no, God didn't say the birth of the woman's seed promised to Adam and Eve is 2,000 years off, or 1,500 years, or wherever you are at that particular point. So that's kind of interesting. They're always looking, who's the child? And that's why the promise is so important. And the firstborn never gets it. See, because men aren't controlling this. God is. All right. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. So every indication would be that Joseph was born. And so 17 years later, if we are guessing that 10 years would be a reasonable time for Reuben and Levi to be of the right age and Dinah, okay, then now we're later. So, he's tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Hebrew tenses are kind of funny, but you could easily translate, he always brought their father, or he was bringing his father bad reports, rather than a single incident. Joseph is a wonderfully talented guy who seems to be oblivious to the effects that his talent and God's favor have on other people. Mm-hmm. He is a single-minded guy. It's hard to judge, it's such an interesting story, you know. Okay, so now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. Now, what's the interesting thing here? What occurs to him? Thinking of
Benjamin was born much later than Joseph.
Yeah.
So why is he ignored?
And perhaps it's because, and again, people try to figure out something of a chronology. And so clearly Benjamin and Joseph were both his favorite sons. But Joseph is 17 years old. And, the other one is too young. You know. And of course, when Joseph is killed, eaten by a wild animal, Jacob thinks, then Benjamin is going to become the favorite, you know, they were the sons of Rachel's, right. Okay. All right. And he makes a richly ornamented robe. We usually know that as the coat
of many colors.
But really, a richly ornamented is a better translation than a coat of many colors, because we think in terms of striped, when in fact it would be many colors because it was richly ornamented. It's all the same thing. It's a symbol of his favor, though. So clearly the other sons are not real happy about this whole situation. And his father, he's his father's confidant, you know. Go out and visit him. It doesn't take them long to figure out what's going on. Jacob sends a messenger out to his sons and, how come you're doing this and this and this? Well, how did he know that? You know, so they're not happy. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. You know, they're just not happy. Well, that's what happens when you... Ed, just remember that. Just stick with Bev.
Right, yeah.
You get extra wives and then all kinds of problems come. All right. Joseph had a dream. You got to love both. It's just there's no details, you know. He's 17 years old. His brothers hate him. He had a dream. Moses only wants to tell us what we need to know. All right. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. How to win friends and influence people, you know. He said to them, you can understand why they hated him. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. Now, if you have this dream, you ought to keep your mouth shut, you know. But listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it.
Oh, boy.
How are we to think of Joseph? Well, of course, you got to be careful, man. Maybe, you know, let's do some holy, H-O-L-Y, speculation, although it may be H-O-L-E-Y, filled with holes, but nevertheless. Joseph has this sense of destiny, doesn't he? And every indication from the whole story would be that this sense of destiny arises out of his relationship with the Lord. Because unlike his father, he hardly falters. Yeah. So now, you know, we're making, but if you had to make a movie, you've got to give some, you know, what do actors need? When you're going to act in a play, you need to know what your
motivation.
Yeah, what your motivation is. Why am I acting the way I'm supposed to act in this? So, you know, you got to say something about Joseph. Why do his brother? Otherwise, in the movie that I was talking about before, Jacob and Joseph, his brothers just hate him, and it's very simple. He spies on them, and that's it. And he has these dreams, but there's never an attempt in the movie to to figure out the dreams, but the dreams are very important. Clearly, Moses is telling us about this dream and another dream because the dreams are going to be the story of Joseph all the way through. This is the way God communicates, but especially guides his life through these dreams. So his brother said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? What do you think, you whippersnapper?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream. But does he learn?
No.
And he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream." And we can hear all the brothers. And this time, the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. When he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and says, you know, he's still his favorite, but geez, you got to learn to keep your mouth shut here. What is this dream you had? You know, I think your brothers may be onto something here. Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?
Why didn't the mother, we were just talking about Rachel's
dead, isn't she?
Yeah. But
he's got all these other ones.
The whole family goes, and so the symbol of sun and moon, who knows? I mean, it's kind of tough. It's interesting that we never hear Joseph's reply. Joseph never says anything. I mean, he tells the dreams, but we don't get a reaction. I think he told his father, yep.
Yeah.
I think so. I just have this feeling or something. I think God will be with me and bless me like he did Abraham and Isaac and sort of Jacob. Yes.
I mean, he seems oblivious to the world. I mean, here he is driving around in his Corvette while his brothers have the little Chevy Novas. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about... I saw this dream, blabs it out, and he's
right.
Thinking.
Well, I don't think so, because remember, this guy is going to run the greatest nation on earth in a few short years.
Yeah.
He's got it on the ball. I mean, his brothers sell him into slavery to a guy named Potiphar. Next time we meet him, he's running Potiphar's house. Mm-hmm. Potiphar's wife accuses Joseph of attacking, accuses a slave of attacking her. What do you think Potiphar is going to do if he believed that? That's off with your head. He throws him in jail, probably in prison, because I got to handle this. But he likes Joseph. I mean, again, I'm speculating. But, I mean, you don't rape. Potiphar is one of, or maybe the general of Pharaoh. He's a powerful figure. And you are accused of attacking his wife and you're a slave, you're toast. You know. But Joseph isn't. And then Joseph ends up in prison, and the next thing we know, he's running the prison. And then he ends up, nobody wants to interpret Pharaoh's dream because I don't know what it means, and if it doesn't turn out right, and next thing you know, he's running Egypt. Yes.
Well, one of the things to me is when Joseph is telling his brothers, or even telling his dad, his father, it doesn't sound like he's glorifying himself. It's just simply that he is just simply
It's true, isn't it? God gave me this dream.
Yeah.
Now, what can I say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's kind of interesting to think about these things, isn't it? I think that that Moses is telling us that Joseph was close to the Lord. And that's what all of these things are really about, as opposed to the rest of his brothers. Okay. His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Reminds you of? Mary kept all these things. And is that a coincidence? It's really the same phrase. It's just the difference between Hebrew and English, but it's the same kind of thing. He tucked that away to think about. Hmm. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem." That's probably still a little bit of a concern. "Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flock. See, he's worried because they're up near Shechem. And bring word back to me. Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" "Boy, a son of Jacob is wandering around in the fields," you know. So again, another evidence God is with Joseph.
In his coat?
Yeah, well, is he wearing his richly ornamented robe?
Yeah.
He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So maybe things are a little touchy there with the people in Shechem, but things are all right. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. So right off the bat, I mean, if they see him on the hillside up there, they don't have very much time. So this is really an evil plot. They've had it with him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. And see this in the movie, Jacob and Joseph. I mean, they just take the lines right off the page of the scripture, you know, because it works. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him." You don't have to dig a hole, you know, these cisterns have been dug. "And say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. So Reuben seems to take some leadership there. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him." Now, and see, Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. Well, he's taken his father's wife, one of his father's wives. Maybe he thinks I can get back in my father's graces. I don't know. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. I mean, these cisterns are, if you're tossed in a cistern half full of water, you're going to drown. You know, ultimately, you'll just run out of energy to keep yourself afloat and drown. But it's a dry one. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. That's the other side of the Jordan. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. So they've got these things from the east, and they're valuable, and they're taking them to the cultured and civilized Egyptians. Spices, balm, and myrrh, things like that. Judah and his brothers said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? It's not going to get us anything. Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him after all. He is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. A tiny bit of not much, you know. All right. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern, which probably made him happy or frightened, whatever, and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. I mean, these guys are passing through and they're gone. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. Again, the people in the Middle East are very demonstrative, still are. So he's really unhappy. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. So it appears that Reuben knew. He was in on this cover-up. So they were all part of it. So they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. Now, why Jacob didn't get a DNA sample and figure out that, you know. and CSI, that's what they would have done. You know. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe. We found this valuable robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him." So they torn the robe, and Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him. Well, the daughters, that's all right, but the sons, when one wonders how many people knew, or what, I would guess that the sons probably kept it pretty close to the vest. But he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "in mourning will I go down to the grave to my son. So I'm just going to die and join my son." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph. So Midianites, Ishmaelites, sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. And that's likely the name for the head general, because it probably means the captain of Pharaoh's guard. And not, so that makes him the defense chief. Can't even think who it was. I know who it was, but who it is now, I can't even. We lost our famous guy. Who's that? He resigned.
Colin Powell?
Oh, no, that was
what
do
you mean?
For Egypt or for U.S.?
Secretary of Defense.
Who is the most recent Secretary of Defense?
Rumsfeld.
Rummy, yeah. But I think that's what this guy would be. He would be Pharaoh's chief military officer.
Pastor?
Yes.
What's our time frame here? Maybe 1200?
Oh, no. No. 1400 is the likely date for the Exodus. And that's 400 years, you know.
Yeah, before that.
So we're way back at 1800. 1800 BC, or somewhere between. There's a great deal of study about that. People want to make it later, and it just can't be absolutely nailed down. But we're 400 years before Moses.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're 1800 BC. Well, I think we should stop here, because then we can take the whole of this next, what Moses sticks this horrible story of Judah, I don't know why I was going back to look for that story. Alzheimer's is setting in. But out of the clear blue, we hear about Joseph being sold into slavery. He ends up in Egypt in Potiphar's house. But before the story goes on, we get this horrible story about Judah and Tamar. And what Moses is doing is he's telling us why the children of Israel, that he's writing for, why they ended up in Egypt. And this is there's been already something, but now there's another story. And of course, Judah doesn't come off too well. So again, we see that salvation is not by what we do. It is purely by grace. I want to say to myself that these guys, like Judah and Reuben and so forth, were really evil. I, on the other hand, am a pretty nice guy. But you know that these stories are written for our learning. So.